This week we have been casting a vision for church planting, and some of you have been here every day and you're aware of that. Today we have our staff with us, and I'm a little concerned about that. What happens if they see the light and they all leave here and go out and plant a church? Can you imagine the seminary trying to go on without them? We would have to shut the doors, would we not? And I got to probing this just a little bit, and I got to thinking that the staff that was here when you men went through were so instrumental in your lives, and I'm sure you realize that, to the point that you might not be doing what you're doing now, planting a church, and you might not be here today. And we owe that to our staff. Thank you, staff, for being a part of it. I'm sure that after listening to our speaker, some of you would like to spend some quality time with them, and that's possible. Scott Lair is going to be here till around 3 o'clock, and then he's going to be taken by one of our students to Love Field to fly out. So there's some quality time there for Ed. You're going to be with him. You'll notice that somebody's missing. Lawrence Scott, our speaker on Tuesday. And I'm going to excuse him just this one time, but his wife is delivering right now. She's having a baby, and I'm going to have him bring a note from home next time that they want. And then Ed Marcel is going to be here just for a short time afterwards, and I'm going to take him to Love Field. Now, if you would like to spend some quality time with him, if you would like to take him to Love Field, let us know afterwards, and you can jump right in there. Especially if you're interested in Acts 29. He is their representative, and of course the Village Church and a number of plants in the area are Acts 29 churches. So let us know of that afterwards, because we're going to be taking off fairly quick to get him out to the airport on time. Now, the plan today is I want to spend some time asking them some questions, some critical questions, and then I want to open it up to you so that you can use these mics to ask your questions. Surely some questions have been building over the last few messages, and here's the chance to ask those questions. So, question number one, why would anyone in their right mind want to be a church planter? In other words, what are the advantages?
Well, one of the reasons that I can speak for in my own story of why I want to become a church planter, a lot of people will say America is a churched country, and that's just not true anymore. There are pockets of America where people don't even know the basics, things like speaking to a newspaper editor who I got to be friends with in the Albany area, and he asked me to tell him some things about the Bible, and I started with Abraham, and he paused, very educated guy, and he said, "I know you don't mean Lincoln, but I have no idea who you mean." And that's not a guy who's going to go to church on a regular basis, turn on Christian radio. For him, it's another world. And generationally, that's becoming more and more a quick, repetitive cycle of people not being church. So we need to have new ministries and new churches to reach those new emerging cultures.
Yeah, there's certainly a place for church revitalization, which has taken place around the country. A lot of churches need that, and there's a lot of healthy, growing churches. But when you plant the church, you get to really shaped the DNA, the culture, from the very beginning. And I had a professor, I forget who he was, I'm just kidding, it's Dr. Melfers, actually in front of a class one time. I said something to him, and I remember when we were getting ready to graduate, and I don't know, some of you are probably at that stage, I just felt like it was a little bit icky, would probably be the term that I would use for the process of picking a church. So you'd send these, you know, packets to you and tell you how large they were, where they were located, how much it paid, and it just felt like, I'm not graduating from business school. Like the Spirit, I want the Spirit to lead me in this process. And Dr. Melfers had told me, and some other people had said stuff to me in the process, if you go to some of these churches, you're going to ruin them. And so he basically said, you're not gifted for a lot of these, the type of leadership for some of these places. And because of my personality, he said, you should consider planting a church. And I thought, I'm not qualified, can't do that. I don't know enough of the Bible, even though I was graduating from here, and I can't do that. And then I sat down with a guy from Fellowship Bible Church in Little Rock, Arkansas. They were doing a church planting residency, and that's who actually sent us out. And his name was Tim Lundy, who was the directional leader at the time. And I told him, I said, I think I'm going to do some more education and maybe go be a second guy on staff somewhere. And it was like someone slapped me across the face with a 2x4. He said, why are you building up your resume if God's called you to do something? And so it was one of those, all right, I challenged you guys yesterday, you know, step out. And he challenged me to do that. So I wasn't ready. I wasn't equipped. I don't know if I had what it took, like all that, you know, sometimes you hear all these things, you're like, man, that guy's like a superhero church planner. And I was just, in my weaknesses, he's made known, and he's shown up, and we've messed up in lots of processes, but God does stuff with that too. So that's for us, it was, I didn't know, but I went for it, and God showed up and did some stuff. So.
How might one know if he or she is a church planter? That's an assessment question.
You have to have a soul patch. Little plant.
Yeah.
There can be some narrow views on that, I think.
No, he's laughing, but I went out to Exponential a couple of years ago, and I was in the airport in Orlando. This is the largest gathering of church planters anywhere in the world. And I could tell the church planters, blue jeans, jacket, and that soul patch on there. You could spot them every time. So where's your soul patch?
That's not my thing. See, I just don't fit. I'm not quite in the categories. I've gone to those things before and thought, I don't fit here. Like, what's wrong? But you have to be yours. I think the big thing is we get too narrow in that, especially too. When we say it, a lot of times we're only thinking North America. And so, you know, for a time period it was, well, if you're not wearing black shirts and a choker like Mark Driscoll or whatever, then you're not a church, you're not tough enough to be a church planner. Why don't you go and just pastor a church? Like, that's easy. And then, but I think the main qualification, you mentioned yesterday you were going to ask that question. I was thinking about it. And you look at who's the model of church planning, and it's Paul. Yeah. You got a guy who's been rocked by the gospel.
You mean Paul had a soul
patch? I don't know if Paul had a soul patch or not, but he got...
It's in the text.
It's somewhere.
Critical apparatus.
Yeah, it's not in my black and white version. You got to get in the color, the HD version. But yeah, I think you got to be changed. Your life has been radically transformed by the gospel. And then you want to see other people experience that. So like Ed's saying, he's bumping into people they don't know. Like if you say, it's like in the Old Testament, and they're like, there's two testaments? Like, what are you talking about? Or you have to have a heart and a passion that you could be transformed by the living Christ. So I think that's the main qualification. And then we narrow stuff too much in some of the other things of personalities and gifting. You got to be able to communicate and gather people together. But the big thing is being rocked by the gospel. I think maybe you'll disagree.
No, I totally agree. I just had a couple other things. I think called is the number one thing. Especially, I remember my pastor here at Trinity Presbyterian up in Plano coming to my house one evening, and this was not a guy who did pastoral visits. I'll stop. It was a surprise that he would show up at my house, and I knocked on the door, opened it, and he was standing there, and he said, "Are you called to plant this church?" And I said, "Yeah, I believe God has called me." He said, "Good, because there are going to be days where that is all you have when you are planting this church. When there are five people and two of them are wolves trying to gnaw on the other sheep, and one of the guys thinks he should be planting the church because he's 22 and has become a Calvinist now and he knows everything. And he said,
you're not supposed to preach at this one, I don't think.
Sorry. This is more therapy than preaching at this point. I think some of the traits in a person are visionary leadership in terms of communication and being okay with rapid change, and yet the tension of patience and rapid change, which I get is a real hard pull. But those two pieces are there, and I firmly believe those gifts are going to call and are going to be best recognized by the body. So I would be very careful to say, are there other people affirming that in your community who know you?
You mentioned a call, and sometimes that can be confusing, and that comes up in seminary. And whenever I hear that, I always say, what is a call? I'm one of these guys that likes clarity. I want to make sure we're talking about the same thing. Something that's helped me there is passion. I like to use that term because I would say passion is what we care deeply about, what we feel strongly about. And if you sense that in terms of church planting, that's really key. I might mention that if you go with a denomination or perhaps a network, a lot of them now are requiring you to go through an assessment process because we found that while we need to know how to plant a church, who plants a church is almost as important, if not more important, than how we plant a church. And so we've discovered some things over the years that people whom God has blessed in church planting, they have a lot of things in common. And so a lot of good organizations that if you go with them, they'll have you go through this process. And the assessment is a great process. Some people say, well, what if I don't pass the assessment? Well, that's fine. It's good to know now that you're not a church planner. Let's find out what people who are wired like you, what are they doing in ministry that God is blessing? So it's actually a good experience wherever you land. So any other comments on how one might know if he's... Okay. if you are... a church planter. How might one prepare? I guess another way to say that is, if you were to do it all over again, what would you not do? Mistakes. Lots of those. We'll be here all morning. What would you not do, and what would you do differently?
I'm going to jump on that right away, because I planted two churches. The first one out of seminary, I think I did most everything wrong, except good exegetical preaching. We were taught that here. But we started with too little funding. $12,000 seemed like a great amount when we were leaving seminary. It bought a projector and two computers, and we were broke. You're like, this is what you had. Too low of a birth weight for the core group. People were pushing and saying, we need to be a church. And I wasn't able to say, no, we need to be a community together and be able to serve. I didn't do that right. Those pieces I would be very careful about. And being able to attract other leaders. You're going to find, when you leave seminary, people have built into your quip. You've learned to say things that are nuanced, and things that are profound, and things that are resting on good theology. There are going to be a group of Christians out there who will be very easily impressed by that, because you're beyond educational level. A lot of people have been taught. But if other leaders aren't drawn to that, you may want to be very careful to say, that's something I would do differently. In coaching people, my wife asked me a great question one time. So what's the most common thing you've said to the 50 or 60 church planters you've coached? And it's patience. It comes up again and again, that if you're going to be living in a ministry healthy for 30, 40 years, spend the extra 2 years preparing, seeing what you can do to clarify the vision, to draw other people in, to help you with that, to complement your leadership.
I just jump on patience. That's one of the big things. Is I'm even talking to a couple students yesterday after chapel. There was such an urgency, like the world is going to go to hell if I don't get done with this degree really quick. And sometimes it feels like that as a church planner too. Like, we've got to get this, the next step. Just got to go to the next thing, and constantly living in the future, and you miss the present, which obviously, one, just in your own spiritual journey, you miss the enjoyment of what's actually happening. And then two, I think about being original and being yourself. There's a big temptation. There's so much good stuff out there, and you can get it from all these different great churches, and it's to take all the best things from these different places. And I remember I went to a church planning residency for about 11 months before we planted the church. And one of the things they did is we hopped in a van and drove down I-40 from Little Rock, Arkansas through Tennessee to a bunch of church plants. And there was one that had grown in Fellowship Nashville. It was about like 8,000 people or something. And I was sitting in their membership class, and I've been emailing with a guy that was going to plant the church with me. And we were talking about our core values. We had about 40 of them, which that's not core values. And I looked around in their membership room, and they had on the walls these statements, these five different statements of worship, community, and growth, and generosity. And I thought, that sums it up. And I asked them, I wrote them and said, hey, can we have your core values? And the guy said, he was wise, he said, you can use whatever you want, but put it in your own words so that it's yours. And I thought, it's just me and this other dude. You got a communication department. Are you kidding me? We're stealing your stuff. And so we took it. And then a few years into the plant, they were true things, but it was like, that's not us. And so we need to change that. And then people are stirred up like, you don't change your core values. And I was like, well, I just want to put the words on who we actually are rather than taking somebody else's words. And then in that same process, we also launched a capital campaign, ended another capital campaign. We did a whole bunch of stuff because I wasn't being patient. And it caused pain and difficulty that we then had to recover from. And so there was more mess from that. And so I think being patient and then being yourself would be some of the big mistakes that we've made.
If I could add one more thing for when you're at seminary, every idea you have about church planting, log it somewhere, right? Like, keep that sketch pad or Moleskin, I know it's a world's changed, that you wrote that down in. Put it in Evernote so you can search it. I mean, just keep every single piece of that, because you're going to go back and clarify those and use those. Don't think you're going to remember what was said here. You won't. You knew that from the second test you took, that you didn't remember everything that was said here. So I would also say, use this time not just as envisioning what could be, but actually start keeping some of the pieces, and be careful not just to do the knots, right? Like, this is a mistake I'd made and a lot of people do. Well, we see the church that's out there. We're not going to do this. We're not going to. There are a million things you're not going to do. Start to try to figure out, how do I move from being someone who's complaining to being a holy critic and saying, this is what we are going to do.
When I ask you how you might prepare, you missed my point there. You were supposed to mention my church planting course.
And that's a given.
Okay,
it's unsaid. It doesn't even need to be said.
That was a given. All right, great. One of the things that comes to mind when we talk about church planting, when we go into an established church, there's a salary there, and there's a budget and that type of thing. And church planting, where does the money come from? What any suggestions there? Finances?
Yeah, so you want suggestions for today, right? When we started the church, we raised money like a missionary that wouldn't be in a denomination or organization, and we went around to a bunch of our friends with relationships and just said, hey, can you give us $50 a month or $500 a month, depending on the person, and raise money that way. But there's lots of organizations. He's with A29, X29, Southern Baptists do stuff, E-Free. It depends. And if your church is a sending church and has a vision for church planning, and if you're planning on planting a church, I would suggest being with a church that does, then a lot of times you'll get support through that. But we did. We actually had an organization that approved us, went through the church planning process, and we felt like it violated the autonomy of the local church and what they wanted us to do. So it was like a capital venture. We'll give you this amount of money up front, but you've got to give us 10% of your budget forever. And so we felt like, I'm not going to be pastoring this church forever. How can I commit to something like that? And so we didn't want to get involved in something like that, but you can be so hungry for, we bought our projectors and computers, now we don't have any money, that you take something like that. And I'd say, when you're in this situation where the pressure's not on, start thinking through, what is it I'm not going to compromise for money? But there's a lot of options out there. Organizations, individuals, but relationships, just like most of life, relationships are key.
That's really good. I think that's absolutely true. One of the things in the first church plant that the church wasn't doing well yet, we hadn't figured out how the body worked together well. We were very parochial 20 years ago. And I tried to get groups that were really near in their DNA together to support our first church plant, and it would degrade quickly into, well, whose name are you going to have there? Who gets paid back their church planting funds first? And it turned into just this breakdown of parochialism, of it's ours or it's theirs. I don't know what changed, but that environment has changed for you guys, where now it's really possible for the body to cooperate functionally well. A lot of our churches are supported by two or three different movements, and I would encourage you to look for multiple sources to get funding. And what Scott says, I just want to underline because it was so important, check what strings are attached, right? That was one of the wisest things that was said on the finances. Don't just get in this mindset of, I need the money these guys are giving us, and be very careful. Sometimes the strings are actually not just supporting and tethering you, they actually kind of hamstring and bind you.
Because so many networks and denominations are struggling right now in terms of decline, I'm finding that to recruit church planters, they're starting to come up with funds. And that's not an issue like it used to be. Now, I've been teaching church planting here for 35 years. And back then, that was a major issue. Where's this coming from? Do we have to be independently wealthy to plant a church? But now the funds are there, and they're not a lot of strings, at least not like they used to be. So don't let that get in the way. It shouldn't get in the way anyway, but let me back that up and just encourage you. That's probably not going to be a major issue for you. What about some of our ladies here? You may have noticed that we didn't have any ladies preaching this past week. What might be a role for women, single, married, in church planting? What is there in this for them?
Well, I would say our church wouldn't function.
I told you to expect that.
Our church wouldn't function if we didn't have women.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know the stats on it, but the majority of churches have more women in them than they do men. And I think the real question, I mean, we want to jump to the Timothy passage of you can't teach or have authority, but the real question is, what is your giftedness? Because it's just like any of the other people in the church. Because if you're the one that's called to plant the church, then you're going to be doing the majority of the preaching and teaching anyways. Then all the women that come, what else, what do you do? What is your gifting? Let's put you in your sweet spot.
Yeah.
Now, when you're first starting the church, we don't really care about your sweet spot. We need a print bulletins and whole babies. And that's your sweet spot today. Yeah. And then you grow and develop and try to get people to their spots, or else they burn out. So I think the big question is their gifting.
Yeah, and I know that we can get to that issue of egalitarian, complementarian. Our church has male eldership, so that's the one thing not in our church for women in church planting. But that has more to do with redeeming what Adam missed in having the word first and not teaching it than it has to do with any difference between men and women that way. So we're very careful to say, especially in the Northeast, submission is such a loaded word now, right? I mean, it's become a negative word in almost every context, and we may need to figure out the phrases that aren't offensive, but to say, this isn't degrading any more than Jesus was degrading or devalued to submit to the Father. And that's an important starting point for us. And then to be able to say, don't make it about the one thing you can't do, but all the ministries that are there that can be done. And I remind our women a lot that pastoring is a title of an office, a gift, and a ministry. every Christian should be pastoring, should be discipling, should be shepherding. My wife is probably more gifted pastorally of caring for people and moving them down their line in their walk with Jesus than I am that way. So we have to value that. Our number one ministry is our small group ministries, that we were small groups before we were church, and we'll say that that's our primary place of discipleship and mission. And there are women who lead those groups for us. So there are critical roles that any Christian should be playing. It's just a matter of knowing and being able to step in. And a lot of times in church plants, it's the people who are willing and jump in that end up with those positions of service. Everything's so busy that you don't need to be told. You just need to like ride where there's gunfire and join the battle there, right? So that's what I would encourage you. Just jump in and serve. And those guys who are leading church will be very grateful to have an active body.
Okay. Some guys, when they go out church planting, they like to go in, I would call it cold turkey, or they talk about parachuting into an area where they don't know anybody. Nothing has gone ahead of them. Others look to denominations for support. Some are looking at networks. What would you recommend in terms of those areas? What would you pursue if you had to do it all over again?
I'm in the area I grew up in. And that was critical for my calling. And I know guys who've been very successful where they did choose a new area and some parachuted in. Because I was born in that area and was a non-believer until my early 20s, I didn't have to try to exegete the culture. These were my people. I was the guy who bought Bertrand Russell's Why I'm Not a Christian to read and poke at the two Christians I knew just for fun. They were a spiritual pinata for me to hit, right? So I knew what that culture was and is. And that's so critical to acting. So for me, going back to the people you know, I felt like the demoniac of the Gerardines, to be quite honest, when he said, go and tell your people what great things God has done for you. So it was easy for me to have a love for those people, understand those people, and go do it. If you're not from an area, I'd encourage you back to underscoring patience. Take a year to live and work there. A lot of you may end up bivocational anyway. And to develop relationships before you're a pastor makes those relationships normal. I was really glad to have 2 years in our city before I was pastoring, because when you get asked that question, it changes the dynamic right away. But there were people who knew me, and I just real quickly, I think of the woman who ran our smoothie shop, and my daughter worked there, I'd bring her all the time. And then she found out one day what I did. And her question was this. She said, I don't mean to be offensive, but you seem intelligent and normal. Why are you a Christian? I said, that's actually patently offensive to say that to me, but I'll tell you why. And she was an atheist who later came to the church to visit, was the kind of person who said, didn't like any of the stuff you said, loved all the people. And her view began to change about the church, but not transformation yet. So I would say that know your area, either by birth or being a good missionary and spend some time there before you put that label of I'm a church planter.
That's a good word. I did not live in the area that we were at ever before we went to plant the church there, but really went there for the same kind of reason, because I remember I had been a youth pastor, had taught, you know, God gives you the desires of your heart, delight yourself in the Lord, he'll tell you where he wants you to go, but I wasn't applying it to myself. I felt like, if I'm planting a church, I got to go to, like, where's the hardest spot? And so I remember thinking California, and went out with my wife to vacation out there and kind of look at some of the different spots and thought, I don't know if I'm cool enough for California. Like, this doesn't fit, but I heard some stat. It was something like, and I think I picked it up in the student area here where it was like 36 million people, 30 million of them, no attachment to any religion. I'm like, that's got to be the spot. And then I thought, well, maybe Seattle, that's a hard spot. And I'd never been out there. And then I sat down with a guy, he's friends with Dr. Melfers, Bob of the E-Free Church, I forgot his last name.
Aroli.
And he said, why don't you go to a place where you want to live? And then the people that are there are going to speak the same language as you. Now, obviously, most of us are speaking English anyways, but he meant you just think and talk about the same kind, like you're saying, reading the same books. And so we ended up going to Raleigh, North Carolina, because it was a bunch of people like us, similar lifestyle, similar personalities. And it's the Research Triangle Park. There's a lot of people that are highly educated and travel in and out of this area, and they're real transient. And we started looking. I originally said I wouldn't go there. God's got a divine sense of humor. I said I wouldn't go to a Christian college when I became a Christian, and then I went to a Christian college to find a Christian wife. So he used my bad motives to do that. But it worked. and then I said I wouldn't be a pastor, because I thought, I don't want people to think I'm telling them about Jesus because I'm getting paid to. And he called me into ministry. And then when we said we'd plant a church, I said, I'm not going to Research Triangle Park because I've got family members that live there, and so I must only be going there because it's close to people and makes it easier, as if you need to make it harder intentionally on yourself. And God called us there, and we loved the people and spoke the language, and so that was how we knew. But we had never lived there before, so.
Do you get tempted to say, God, I won't be a multimillionaire, and see if that one continues the battle?
I think he would realize my manipulation on that one. So I just know he's sovereign, and he's also funny. So he's got a sense of humor.
That's a beautiful part of the world, too, out there. I was just there a couple of weeks ago for a ministry, and that's just a gorgeous place, is it not? If you have questions, you could start moving toward the mics, because I'm going to open it up shortly for your questions. Let me mention a sponsor church. I found that for one of the easier ways, if there is any easy way to plant a church, is to have a sponsor church. Because what they'll do is they'll support you, they'll get behind you, they often will fund you, they will train you, they'll bring you on staff, and you get good experience. And one of our great church planters here, Tim Armstrong, is pastoring at the chapel now in Akron, Ohio. But he started out that way, and his pastor, they sent him to seminary, paid his way through seminary, brought him home during the summer, had him invest his life in the church before they came back. And he won the Saddleback Award, of all awards, the best church in the nation. Of course, he was following some of Rick's principles, but what an impact he's had. The church grew very quickly, and it's exciting to see that happen. And that sponsor, having a sponsor church like that to be behind you, to encourage you, to keep an eye out on you, is a good way to go. Let's talk about what's in the future for church planting. Now, I do have one person over here. Jasmine, I'll go ahead and I may come back with another question in a minute, but we'll see. Jasmine?
What is the value of starting a new church, like a church plant, rather than joining forces with a church plant that is already established or a church that has similar values that what we are pursuing?
That's a great question. Statistically, what people have found is new churches attract people and evangelize people more quickly than existing churches. The why is a harder thing to study out and figure out. Some of it is people who are on the brink of change feel they can walk into a new environment and not be as noticed as a church that's existing. They're not stuck with the structures. Some of it's generational. People are speaking the language of the emerging culture, and so it's there. Some of it's just a matter of the logistics of running an established ministry gets so big and focused, it can sort of curb the amount of time and passion you have for extending. But one of the things that anyone who will do even the cursory study will say is new churches are reaching people evangelistically at a significantly higher rate than established churches.
One of the advantages, if I can jump in very quickly, is that in church planting, they're joining you versus in an established church, you're joining them. And that's a huge difference in terms of change, moving in new directions, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And if you're thinking about it as far as you being a part of a church plant here in town as a seminary student, there's a ton of opportunities to serve. Where sometimes in existing churches, it's we're doing our thing, and whether you're a part of it or not, we're doing our thing. And there's at the church plant, there can be the feel of, we need you. Like, we're not just saying that, but we need you. And so I think that a lot of people find their place.
Yep. Yes. I thought I saw somebody back there by that mic.
Well, if I can add one thing to that other while that next person, I see that hand out there, will come forward, is that we had a lot of people who were de-churched, and I don't mean they left for 4 or 5 Sundays. I mean, they walked out 3 or 5 years ago and said, we're never going back. We're taking Jesus with us, and we're leaving the house. And then they see a church that is different in their eyes. Now, the core of it's the same. I mean, we're Orthodox. We're trying to have people love, know, and serve Jesus. But they're able to go in, and I'd say 20% or more. Di, is that pretty accurate of our church? She says higher. I just, so you know, if you're going to be a church planner, always give the lower statistics and fly in low, and you can really, don't be the guy who says, yeah, it's 90%, and you're just lying and making it up. But so somewhere over 20% of our people are rechurched people, and they wouldn't go back in their own minds to a church that exists. The church had burned them, but they were willing to give a new church a chance to reconnect them to community.
And where do you meet, Ed? What do you meet? Don't you meet in a nightclub or something? Didn't I hear somebody say that?
We meet in a nightclub, yeah. So
that's a little less threatening sometimes than a steeple for
less
some
threatening.
Folks.
And it's, you know, it's different, right? Like the churches at the steeple rarely have had in February vomit that was right outside the church entrance and frozen and interns who had to pour hot water on it. I'm just trying to take the romance off the idea of church in a nightclub. There's a lot of negative to it. But you're right. We actually had a visitor at our first Easter service who came and said to me after the service, I don't go to church, but any church that would meet in my club, I'll give a shot to. Okay. So, yeah.
we met at a movie theater for the beginning of our church, and we would run an advertisement. Right in the seat that you're sitting in, you can come to church and encounter God. And so that's a less threatening spot. I've had people in the lobby call me Father because of the Catholic back. Thank you for that talk, Father. Those are comfortable seats. So sometimes the transientness of it, as much as like, you know, your setup team's burning out and you've got all the difficulties of setting up and tearing down, some of that avails itself to reaching people that you might not otherwise reach. So. Yep.
I commented earlier when I was asking about the kind of person that plants churches. And we have noted that often they're usually visionary, entrepreneurial types. And you might be sitting there saying, I've heard that before. That's not me. So church planting must not be for me. Well, those are the leaders we find that are wired that way. But a leader needs a team. And we highly push team church planting. And while the leaders may be that way, the rest of the team doesn't necessarily need to be that way. So it could be that you're in that category. You need to be a staff or a support person on a church planting team and maybe not necessarily the lead person. Regardless, we need you. Was there someone else? Yes, ma'am. Sorry. If you could stand, then I'll know there's somebody in line.
Oh, hi. Earlier, both of you mentioned that you kind of start with the area there you're familiar with and a bunch of people who have a similar background with you. What do you think of now that you take on a harder spot, harder area, like area you're not familiar with and people who have different backgrounds?
That are different.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give for that? Yeah.
I think you're asking, would we do that? Or are you asking, what's the advice for someone who does that?
Yeah, what do you think of it? And would you do that? Mm-hmm.
I'm not planning on planting again. Ed here's done it twice, so he can tell you about that. I've learned a lot of stuff, but I didn't know the area before we came. I spent about a year, like Ed was talking about, he gave some great words of wisdom in that, visiting and getting to know some of the people to find out if that was the right spot. And then even when we moved there, it was several months before we started meeting with the small group, because it wasn't like there were a bunch of people sitting there going, would you please come plant a church here? And so we would just talk to people and share a little 30-second vision of the church, and if they were interested, we'd talk more and we'd invite them. Eventually, what we had to do is have something to invite them to, so we started doing larger group gatherings of sharing the vision, and God was gracious in providing people, but we didn't have a bunch of folks that were just sitting waiting. And we were told, too, when I was doing church planning school, and probably said it in your class, Dr. Melfers, but everyone in your church is going to be 10 years older and 10 years younger than you, and that is not what our experience was. The first guy that said he wanted to be part of our church was almost 70 years old. I was about 30 at the time. And I'm the next person, another guy, I was just texting him. Today was his birthday. He's moved to another city now, but I had a guy run up to me when I was playing flag football in a different city and said, are you planning a church in Raleigh, North Carolina? And I said, yes, yeah, I'm planning on it. He said, I know a guy's going to be an elder in your church someday. And he was one of our first elders eventually. But so you never know how those people are going to come. Hard area, not, you know, if it's your hometown. God does that work. And so it's hard to give a formula. This is what you do, but I don't know what you'd say.
No, I would amen everything that Scott said and just remind us all what we know. We're missionaries. Whether we think America is an understandable church culture, that's fading for all of us. The new America is becoming a very different patchwork than what most of us knew, generationally, new immigrant-wise. So we have to look at wherever we're serving as missionaries. And I think if you're going to an area that you're super familiar with, you can make the mistake of saying, I have it dialed in. I know exactly what this place is all about. But anywhere you're going, you should probably be saying, how do I engage as a missionary? How do I get my presence here to become that platform for truth and grace? And there are people who have gone to complete unchurched regions who are not from that people group and had the biggest impact. In our area, there were only two churches that are over 1,000, and one of the pastors who planted that was from Tennessee, and the other was from Georgia, and it was the one time I was grateful for the SEC and all that they produce. So it can be guys from another place who are doing that work.
Yes.
Thank you for coming here. I grew up in a family that was part of ministry, and so I was wondering, how did you integrate the church building process into your family life, and maybe with your wife, what partnerships did you have to reinforce, and how did you keep the priorities straight despite all the stresses and expectations?
Your wife is here, so I'll let you take a couple moments to process that.
Stand up, Diane. Just stand up for just a minute.
It's my wife, Diane.
My kids found it a challenge, if I can just sneak in an answer there. They found that a challenge to do that, rather than to go sit in church and listen to all this stuff. They loved it, so.
Thank you for your question. Thanks for thanking us for being here. It's great to be back. I would say it's easy to use church planning or the church as a scapegoat for why we have some of the idols that we have in our lives anyways. And one of the things that I did when I was here at seminary is I paid my way through seminary by selling houses, so working in the marketplace. And I had been a youth pastor before that. My wife said to me, I used to think that you worked the way you do just because you love Jesus so much. But now I realize you just do that with everything. And so first I'll say that I'm not great at it. And second I'll say it's idolatry that is not specific to church planting. It's part of our own wicked hearts. And from, I can't say all of yours, but I know my own of really comes back to not believing that what Jesus did on the cross was enough. Like I've got something to prove. Not embracing. I went through a period of time, a few years into planting the church. It was real, you know, lots of people showed up, so everyone thinks that's great. At the beginning, people are getting saved, and there's all this stuff to do, though. When we finally hired an executive pastor, I remember there was a transition moment for me where it was, am I going to go do something else in addition to pastoring this church, or am I going to let God do a work in my heart? And he started to deal with stuff, started oozing out. I didn't like it, which then my tendency would be go do work, start doing more stuff. And what God does in that refining process, and planting a church, I think, is a great place for that, is he starts to strip away a bunch of that junk. And so you go through, like, the book of Philippians, and one of the best passages is when Paul says in Philippians chapter 3, I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his suffering. But if you look at that book, it's a ton of loss. And he says right before that, anything I considered gain, I now consider loss in comparison to knowing Christ. And so I think it's as you become more secure in what Christ has done for you, and who Christ is, then it frees you up to enjoy life and not just always be in the future. And so visionary and all that stuff, we can glorify all those things, but a lot of times that's idolatry, and it's not just giftedness. So that's my thought.
I'm going to jump in and share from the two church plants I was at, and this will be a humbling one, because the first one, I would have said the whole time, I'm loving Jesus with all my heart, serving him first. I'm a family guy who loves my family, and then I'm a pastor. But the reality was somehow that became completely inverted. And if the weight and center is not Christ, it's not going to hold, because those other things weren't designed to hold a community of saints. They weren't designed to hold your soul. Mm-hmm. So it became this situation where I think I began to see this burden obligation of planting the church and saying to the Lord, of course, you know who I am and I'm on your team. So I don't have to reaffirm that. You know who I am. You've saved me and have taught me through your Bible, so I can go do this work. And my wife, who was like a really kind, good Christian woman, when I would say, I have to do this work, she would say, well, that's good. You go do that, honey. I just need to support you. And suffering's part of life and ministry. And I basically was burned out. At year 7 of that first church plant, I was ready to leave ministry at that point and just say, I can't, won't do this, whichever it was, ever again. Until I realized in the second church plant that couldn't be inverted. It had to stay. You have to be a soul before God no matter what. And then you serve your family and you give the church the holy leftovers. And if you live those two things well, I discovered, they are really good leftovers. If you're really living that life as a pilgrim, and we have a phrase at Terra a lot where we'll say to people, you have to be a pilgrim before you can be a priest. You have to be a man or a woman who passionately seeks their God regularly to even have anything to say. Because if you just live out of what you've been taught and who you are, the well of your intellect, even your physical abilities and your emotional abilities will run dry really quickly if you're not living from that center core of life in Christ and just giving leftovers to that. And I think my wife would say that was largely true, that I had to learn to do that. And I then had in the second church plant someone say something to me that was gold. It was the piece of church planting advice and coaching that I'd never heard the equivalent to. It had something impact me this heavily. So you're listening. That's why I say all those things up front. He asked my wife after an assessment, who's your husband's pastor? And she gave the man's name. How big is that church? 3,000 people. How much time does he spend with your husband? Oh, they have lunch once every couple months. Yeah, you really can't pastor someone over a meal once every 60 days. And then he looked at her right in the eye and said, you're his pastor. You have to be the one who really knows him and shepherds him. When I was pacing the floor at 2 a.m., she was the one who could say, you have some anxiety stuff in your life that we need to talk about.
your congregation will see you as this prepared person. They get a resume self of you, right? You've worked 16 hours to speak 40 minutes. You better look pretty good during that time. And they're going to assume that you're more than you are. But to be able to have the people closest to you, my wife, my elders, be able to say, man, you have this wrong right now. It's important to be pastored during that process.
We have run out of time. And if you would like to ask some questions, well, Ed won't be around for very long, but Scott will be around afterwards. I'd like to also mention that these men come at their own expense, and they are here, and we're thankful that they're willing to do that. Let's give them a hand and thank them for being here. I'll close in prayer. Father, we do thank you for these men and the many out there who are like them and the many who will be out there from this school in the future because of these challenges. Father, if you would have us move in that direction, then you will make that clear to us. And we just thank you for being who you are and for the privilege of being a part of your body and of being able to plant churches. Give these men a safe journey home. In Jesus' name, amen.